Charles Caleb Colson was well within the mark when he said, "That which is good will invariably become better, and that which is worse will inevitably become worse. For time, vice, and virtue do not stand still." And that is right. If you're not improving, chances are you're going backward. You're not going to stand still in regard to your morality. So your interest in these spiritual things is an indication of your awareness of the fact that we are tending toward a spiritual destiny and that we need to be constantly about the business of maintaining a correct course and making sure that our activities are in accordance with what we understand to be the will of God. Thank you for coming. I want to introduce what I'm going to talk about in making marriage work this morning by reading a passage from the 19th Psalm, which says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line is gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them hath he set a tabernacle for the sun, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, and rejoiceth as a strong man to run his race. He is going forth from the end of the heaven, and his circuit unto the ends of it, and there is nothing hid from the heat thereof. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is thy servant warned, and in keeping of them there is great reward. Who can understand his errors? Cleanse thou me from secret faults. Keep back thy servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. Then shall I be upright, and I shall be innocent from the great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my Redeemer." When God created everything, he did so through the process of communication. Communication is the basic tool of God. That is a fundamental fact. May I say it again for your consideration? Communication is the basic tool of God. In the beginning, God said, "Let there be light." And immediately all of the component parts of life, which together arranged make light, came together. That is powerful communication. It speaks to the business of creation, that communication does. By the same token, God's communication is what salvation is all about. It is the basic tool of God in salvation. In the beginning, John chapter 1 says, was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And please be advised, that's how that needs to be read. The fact of the matter is, he's not saying the Word was God and was with God. He's saying the Word was God. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And there was not anything made that was out without him. And in him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Please take note of the fact that the word Word is used. And that's not just the logic that the Greeks had in mind when they used that term logos. It has to do with the business of Christ being the expression of God. And this passage says it over and over in John's prologue to his gospel, because he says here, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory as the only begotten God. Verse 14. Full, he says, of grace and truth. Jesus Christ, ladies and gentlemen, was the expression of God regarding grace and truth. In the 18th verse, he says, no man hath seen the Father at any time, but the only begotten God, that's the Word who was with God in the beginning, who was God, He hath declared Him. That's communication again. Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved, and he that believeth not shall be condemned. Is expressing the words so that people can understand what God wanted us to know in order to obtain His grace and mercy, in order to have peace and forgiveness. By the same token, the Apostle Paul said to the young preacher, the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou unto faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. Paul said, moreover, brethren, I declare unto you the gospel which I preached unto you, which you received, wherein you stand, and by which you're saved, if you keep in memory the things that I have commanded you, unless you have believed in vain. And he said, furthermore, this gospel is the power of God unto salvation to all them that believe. And that gospel is good news. It is God's sayings. It is the good sayings of God. That's communication. So it should not seem to be any kind of a surprise to us to understand that communication, which is the basic tool of God, should regulate and control the marriage relationship. It is a process of communication, as we shall see as we go along. Let me say another two or three things about this business of communication. Communication is sharing. Fix that in your mind. Communication is sharing. It's commonly used in our language in our day and age to describe the sharing of ideas or the exchange of thoughts or making available messages that have information in them that is pertinent to our needs. That's communication. It's an expression, communication is. That word needs to, when you express something from one place to another, you take it from one destination to another destination. You take it from one point to a destination that you have in mind. And that's the process of communication. We do that with words, which we call vehicles of thought. They're signs of ideas, somebody has said. And what that is, what that says is that communication is taking some thought that is in my mind and giving it a word that is common to me and to you and then running it across from me to you, and that's expression. And what you do to do that is you put together enough words that you have a train of thought. Communication, ladies and gentlemen, is pitching and catching, Dr. Mortimer J. Adler says in his great book, How to Speak, How to Listen. And do we not say when somebody says something and we didn't totally understand, I'm sorry I didn't catch that? Communication then is sharing. And the myriad of terms that we use that are synonymous with the concept just run everywhere. Community. Commute. Communion. Intercourse. Transmission, transportation, communism, comrade, comparde. The idea in all of those is a commonality. It is having something together. In fact, I don't know whether you'd ever thought about it, but in English, every word that starts with C-O-M, and most of the words that start with C-O-N, which is a Latin prefix, which means together, a con, which means with, all of those things mean common. Common. It's something that we have together. It is indicative of a connection. Communication is a recognizable fact of life. It's everywhere. Nature communicates with itself, produces oxygen. Man, on the converse, produces carbon dioxide. The rain communicates with the soil, causing things to grow. Your body communicates. The mind communicates with the muscles. And it does it by electronic impulses, which it sends from one place to another to get something accomplished. Modern technology is little more than man's communication with what's already here. That's what he does. Electricity moves through wires. That's communication. It's moving something from one place to the other. So does plumbing. The computer, please don't take that word for granted either. It has the prefix com, computer, and then the Latin word putare, which means to reckon. So it's a reckoning together, and that's what a computer does. It's a machine that puts things together to make solutions for problems. And so communication is everywhere. Man's body, as I said, is a communication machine. The blood communicates with the vital organs. It is no wonder that the psalmist would say, I am fearfully and wonderfully made. And may I suggest to you that the business of interpersonal relationships is highly dependent upon good communication. Studies have shown that the CEOs are not always the intelligentsia. The CEOs have certain things in common. They are driven people, for one thing. But the CEOs have one thing in common that defies that is above all of their other attributes, and that is they're able to communicate. They, in some way or the other, are able to do that. And man's ability to communicate is indigenous to his nature. We have little grandchildren. You have grandchildren or children? Did you ever notice that you don't have to explain to children about tenses? Now, you think about that. I said communication is indigenous to man's nature. When you say to a little kid, just the smallest little child, you say to that child, did you do that? They know you're not saying, are you going to do that? They know that it was something that pertains to the past. And so they understand language is a part of who we are. It is not without accident that when God saw that man was evil continually, and he decided to separate man from man, the way he did it was the simplest way. He didn't go in there with bombs. He didn't go in there and separate them out and say, I want you to move over here and I want you to move over here. All he did was walk in there one day and confound their language. And when he confounded their language, he separated them. I want you to get that fixed in your mind, because we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. In marriage, when the language is confounded and we don't understand one another, we got problems. Do you see that? So communication is a powerful, powerful tool. God is communication. In the record that we read from you, the heavens declare the glory of God. They have their own language. As stars twinkle, the moon shines. The sun is brilliant. All of those things are the expression of nature. The aspens are beautiful as they twinkle in the autumn sun. All of those things are expressions of nature. And day by day they utter speech, he says, and night by night they show knowledge. And there is no speech or language. I don't care where you go, nature speaks to that language. And so God is just marvelously involved with communication. It is His basic tool. And all expression, all transmission, all participation, all intercourse finally and ultimately eventuates in God. He made us like we are. There just is always going to be communication associated with God. Now, let me suggest to you, and then we'll be through with these fundamentals. Let me suggest to you that there are three things, or two or three or four things, that are absolutely necessary for communication. I worked, as some of you know, in broadcasting for about 20 years before I was a preacher. And I quickly understood that there are three things that are essential for a broadcast, and one is a transmitter, and the other is a receiver, and the other is a message. And you may have the best transmitter in the world, if you have no message, you're not going to have communication. You're not going to have a broadcast. And you may have the best receiver in the world, but if the transmitter is not emitting its signal, then you don't have communication. And you may have the best transmitter and the best receiver that money can buy. You may have a Bose system even. But if you don't have a message running from one to the other, you don't have communication. Because that's how communication works. Furthermore, in communication, there must be a conscious effort to say something. There must be a conscious effort to say something. When a speaker says, friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. What he is saying is, I have something to say. I'm making a conscious effort to run some information from my mind to your mind. Listen to me. That calls for purpose in the case of nature and for an active mind in the case of human reasoning. It always has a purpose. And just as God said something in nature, as we read a while ago, in the creation of man, man has something to say to God. And so the great privilege is that I say something to God and He says something to me, as I pointed out last night. You may hear a great speech, but when you speak with God Almighty, then that's really something. Secondly, there has to be a commonality of language. As I said, when God got ready to disperse the nations abroad, He just confounded the language. If I said to you this morning that I'm about to engage in the synchronized coordination of the neurophysiological reflexes with semi-automatic impulses, what would you say about that? Raise your hand if you have something to say about that. Nobody's saying anything. Because we didn't understand that, did we? Synchronized, put together. Coordination, that's again, together, commonality. Synchronized coordination of the neurophysiological, not completely physical, not completely neurological, but neurophysiological reflexes, impulses, with semi-automatic, not automatic, but semi-automatic impulses is the medical definition. And when I say this, this is going to pop into your mind just right away. That is the medical definition for laughter. Laughter. You didn't know you were doing all that, did you? That's kind of like the fellow that drove nails for a living. He was just wonderful. He was a master carpenter. And when he hit the nail, he could hit it the second time so that it just exactly went just under the wood, so that all he had to do is put the putty there. And a physicist saw him doing that one day. And he said, I want you to know what kind of laws are involved in what you're doing. And he explained it to him in a physical way, and he never could do it again. Now, you can still laugh. I'm glad to know that. There must be a destination, too, for the message. The message is no good if it finds no place. If you're not tuned in to the right frequency, there will be no broadcast. There will be no expression. There will be no transmission. So there has to be that. You have to catch. That's the idea. Little Johnny was not paying attention in the class, and the teacher said to him, Little Johnny, are you having trouble listening? He said, No, ma'am, I'm having trouble hearing. There's a difference, you know, because listening requires a conscious effort. You might hear the sounds. Norma says to me that I have this ability to block everything out, that I sit in a chair and everything else is gone. And I just have this tunnel that I'm in. And she will come to me, and I can tell you how she transmits the message. She walks up to me and she puts her hands right there on my mouth and she says, I have something to say to you. And what that's saying is, listen. Listen. There are two kinds of listening, actually. There's passive listening, and then there's active listening. And passive listening is just hearing sounds and catching a word now and then. But active listening is when somebody is... I tell you, it's interesting to me that audiences think you don't see them. If you knew, for instance, what you look like when you go to sleep in church, you never would do it anymore. When a fellow goes to sleep in church, the first thing he does is tilt. And then all of a sudden, he defies the law of gravity because he has a trickle up here instead of down here, the spittle. And then his eyes get heavy. And then he tries to focus, and then all of a sudden he's gone. And if you knew how that looked, you wouldn't. So I'm saying to you that you can be a passive listener, but I see other listeners. I see people that are what we call on the edge of their seat. And what they're doing is this. They have the antennae up. And everything is in readiness to receive. And you have been that way, both for Brother Harold and I this week. And we appreciate it very much. Well now, poor communication can corrupt good marriages. I knew you thought I was going to say poor communication corrupts good morals, didn't you? Poor communication corrupts good marriages. There are literally dozens of ways that poor communications can be a detriment to a good marriage. Good education in a marriage is absolutely necessary. Let me suggest to you some things that you need to put in a good marriage in terms of education. First of all, educate one another. That's another way of saying get to know one another. Well, what are you really trying to say? What that says is come to terms with one another. There's a difference in a word and a term. A word can give you just a denotation, but a term gives you a connotation. And a word out here by itself may have a definition, but a word put into a context has connotation. And you need to come to terms and understand one another. Try to understand one another by listening to one another. And that's hard, isn't it, when you don't want to? But it takes a conscious effort. Listen to one another. Take his mouth and make him listen. Second, nagging is a sure sign of communication breakdown. Nagging is a sure sign of communication breakdown. Nagging is a process by which you annoy somebody by scolding or complaining or constant criticism, or it's Proverbs 27:15, nagging is. They don't use that word there. But he says, a continual dropping on a rainy day and a woman are alike. And it's the same with a man. If you get on some subject and you just nag and nag and nag about that, the wise man attributes this nagging to the female, but it can be just as true of the male who is contentious. Don't nag in marriage. And you'll be happy. Nagging is like a dripping faucet. It can drive you crazy, no matter who does it. And remember, it can sneak up on you. You can do it almost without thinking about it. You get on a subject that you think's important, and you just wear somebody out with that. Stop. Explain what you're talking about. Get the communication process together. Get the transmission that you're trying to say to your mate. And make sure that you're running across the lines of communication, those words that are understandable between the two of you, and then make your communication clear to one another. It ought to be possible in a marriage relationship for us to express the most intimate details of our feelings without kind of being reserved, without being... Now, I'm not saying you ought to say everything. Norma drives, and she does two or three things that just drive me nuts. And I never have told her about them. And I'm not going to tell her about them because it suddenly occurred to me that if she does two or three things that drive me crazy, I must do 25. And she's not been on my case about it. That's love, is what that is. But there is a time when you need to express yourself instead of being nagging in your communication. There are other interferences in broadcasting. We call that static. Static. It's an interference in the communication. And it throws the communication off center, and you may just catch a word. And if you catch just a word or two, it may not be right. It may not be accurate. It may not be what the transmission is trying to say. So there are other inferences that indicate communication problems. And you can add your own if you like. But there is a failure to participate. Sharing is what communication is all about. One-sided conversations rarely edify a marriage relationship. There must be two-sided conversations. You need to listen, but you need to speak. You need to speak, but you need to listen. And let me say something about criticism. Criticism should never be levied until you first of all determine that you love the person. It ought to be said lovingly. Criticism is not constructive if it is not predicated on love, and criticism that is not constructive is destructive. I wish we could see that in marriages. If the criticism is not intended to build up, if it's intended to hurt, that's what it does. If it's intended to hurt, what it does is tear down. It erodes a good relationship. It tears down communication. It makes somebody turn you off. And when you are turned off by somebody, they no longer hear. Watch for poor attitudes. Brother Harold and I were talking this morning. He made an observation about Adolf Hitler that rather fascinated me. We were talking about great speechmakers and their similarities. And he said Adolf Hitler's speeches, if you translate them, have very little substance. It was mostly how he said it, he said. And that's what I'm saying to you. It's not always what you say, but how you say it. And there is a kind of communication that is nonverbal. You can put somebody down by just doing all kinds of nonverbal things, of just doing that, or just saying, There are all kinds of things like that you can do that are manifestations of poor attitudes in communication. Righteous lips are the delight of kings, and that love him, that everybody loves him that speaketh right. Be careful how you say it, especially when you're disagreeing. If you're careful how you say it when you disagree, I have to tell you something. Bless her heart. She loves me so much that she does not want me to get out here looking bad. I put on my tie this morning. I knew when I walked in the bedroom or that it was the wrong tie. And she has this just wonderful way of disagreeing without being disagreeable. And so she said to me, "Is that the tie you usually wear with that?" You know what that means? I hate that tie. You shouldn't wear that tie with that jacket. It doesn't look right. That's what that's saying. But do you not see how it's been palliated and ameliorated and softened? That's so good. You know what that is? That's love. That's what that is. That's love. You don't hurt. It's how you say it. Do you really think about saying it in a way so that it doesn't hurt and you still get the job done? That's being a good help meet. That's being a good help meet. And that's being a good headship. That's being what you ought to be. Let me mention just quickly, impulsiveness. So often we speak too quickly. If you worked in radio or television for any time at all, you would know that there is a lot of rehearsal that goes into a program. You go in before you ever read the news on the air. I don't care if it's 2-minute newscast. You go into the newsroom prior to the expression of the news and you do what we call woodshedding the news. You woodshed the news. You read it over aloud so that you know that you're going to be able to say it as well as you can for the audience that is out there to whom you're broadcasting. Impulsiveness has ruined a lot of marriages because people say stuff without thinking. You need to rehearse. That's how you can say, "Is that the tie you usually wear with that shirt?" Because that has been rehearsed. And many problems are caused by someone having to defend something that he didn't rehearse. We just need to be careful. Pride does not work well on the line of transmission. It's a poor way to transmit a message. But humility and care and love allow you to transmit the message in the most marvelous kind of way, even when it's critical. And what happens is everything gets better. Many a marriage has been badly damaged by veiled suggestions, by innuendo, by implications, by, as I pointed out a while ago, a raised eyebrow or a hint of some sort, some needless vindictive sort of provocation. wrong signals, a wink at the wrong time, a smile that is hurtful, not happy, pursing lips. He that winketh with his eyes causes sorrow, but a prating fool shall fall. Proverbs 10, verse 10. He shutteth his eyes to devise froward things. You ever do that? He bringeth evil to pass. Poor body language. All kinds of body language is used in confrontational situations, and we don't need that. We need to rehearse things, and we need to make sure that we're doing right. So let me give you some communication ideas just to close here. The character of good words, in my opinion, are four. These are the characters of all good expression. When you're trying to get these vehicles of thought, this train of thought, across the trail from yourself to somebody else's brain, these are the character of good words. First of all, they're honest. Integrity is absolutely necessary for a good marriage. And there's never a point where it's more important than in regard to the communication in the marriage. Secondly, good words are few. Don't say too much about a thing. Don't brag on him too much, but don't brag too little. Don't criticize too much, but don't criticize too little. Words should be few. Good words are calm words. Many a marriage has been ruined because of shouting people. Listen to me. I learned a long time ago in preaching that you can say the most indictive things to an audience. You can say the most harsh, indictive, accusative things to an audience, and they will accept it and try to do something about it if they know you love them. But if they have some kind of an idea that you are just being vindictive or talking down to them, they may not know what to call it, but they'll just say, go away, and they'll just say, I don't like him. Shouting, replaced by calm. Help. Now, there's a time to shout. And that brings me to the fourth thing, and that is words that are good words are apt. They're apt. They're suitable. They're just exactly right. When Solomon closed the book of Ecclesiastes, the scripture says that he sought to find good ways to express things. He did two things. He sought to find good words with which to express things. That is so important. I wish I could get that across to people. You need to find good ways to say things. And then the other thing is he clenched it. It was so true that when he nailed the nail in there, he turned the board over and he drove the nail down so that it couldn't be taken out. So say good stuff and say true stuff. And your marriage will be really good from the standpoint of communication. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. You're so wonderful to listen.